Good morning, everybody. I guess I could say it's good to be here with you, but I guess that's kind of a relative term. But you know, isn't technology great? Now, if you see me looking around, well, really only Denise is in here in the room with me. So if you see me looking around and it's not right here, then that means that I probably got distracted by a bird or the neighbor kids threw a ball in the back garden or something. Like that. But anyways, technology, I think, is really great, and we are really fortunate that we have all these options available to us so that we are able to continue to talk with each other and lift one another up. I think some of us, maybe myself included, might be wishing that we'd bought stock in Zoom back in February. 6 weeks ago, we all thought that technology played a big role in our lives. 6 weeks ago, we had no idea what we were talking about. This week, I read that in 1943, the chairman of the board of IBM predicted that in the entire world, there would be a market for about 5 computers. It seems easy to laugh at this. After all, everyone sitting here watching today is sitting in front of a computer right now. And we all carry computers around in our pockets and in our pocketbooks every day. It's how we are staying in touch with our friends and our family during this very strange time. So it's easy to laugh about this looking backwards over nearly 80 years since that prediction was made. But when we look forward, we can sympathize with this prediction. We have no idea what's coming. 5 months ago, we had never even heard of this virus that has changed our lives so dramatically right now. We all know that nobody can predict the future. The situation that we are in right now highlights this fact. But if we're honest with ourselves, we will admit that we make predictions all the time. We act a certain way or we do a certain thing, and we expect a certain result. We view life in terms of cause and effect. But we also know from our own experiences, and certainly from what God is telling us in Ecclesiastes through Qohelet, that cause and effect isn't really how the world works. Last week, we read in Ecclesiastes verse 14 of chapter 8, that there are righteous people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked, and there are wicked people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. Where is the cause and effect in this? We just don't know. If you look on the website of any newspaper today, along with all the headlines and the articles about the virus, the lockdown, the numbers infected, you'll also see headlines and articles like how to work from home, how to homeschool your children, or even how to host a successful happy hour on Zoom. These are all answering the question, how do I live now? And that's the question that we as Christians, that's the question that we're asking as well. Not just about the virus, but about life. If we can accept as true what we observe ourselves along with Qohelet, that there are righteous people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked, and there are wicked people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous, we can accept that we don't live in a world of cause and effect. So, how do I live now? That's the question that we're hoping to answer this morning from this passage in Ecclesiastes 9. So, before we get into the passage, I do want to make kind of one technical observation about the structure of this passage. And usually we don't like to talk about technical things and when we're looking at this type of literature, but here it's important to know. So if you look at this section, verses 1 through 12 of Ecclesiastes, there are three sections to it. There are three main sections. There are verse 1 to 6 is a section, verse 7 to 10 is a section, and verses 10 to 11 are a section. And the first and the third verses, the first and the third sections are actually very similar to each other in theme and in what Qohelet is trying to tell us. And what that does in ancient literature, this is a device that is used to point to the reader or to the hearer that what's contained in the middle is something very important. And so we're going to call this a sandwich. And we all know what a sandwich is. If you see it sitting on the table, you know it's a sandwich because there's two pieces of bread and then there's something in the middle. And the bread is important. It's an important part of the sandwich, but the main draw of the sandwich is the part in the middle. So the reason I'm telling you this is because we're going to look at this passage out of the order that it's printed in the text. We're going to look at the first section, verses 1 to 6. Then we're going to look at the third section, verses 10 to 11. And then we're going to go and finish on the middle section, which is verses 7 to 10. And that is kind of the main point that Qoheleth is making, is in those verses, those four verses, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So what is Qoheleth telling us? So we start out in the first section, and what Qoheleth is telling us is he's going to tell us that good and bad happen to all people, and the only certain thing that we have in life is death. And this isn't a new message that we're hearing for the first time in Ecclesiastes. We've heard this throughout the book, but this is what he's talking about now. And he says, but all this I laid to heart, and all this, what that is he's referring back to what he was talking about just before. And so what all this is we don't understand the role of righteousness and the role of wickedness, of our own righteousness and our own wickedness in God's allocation of prosperity and adversity. So the way, you know, like we're talking about cause and effect, the way that we live, if we do righteous things, we don't always receive good things in return for that. And that's that is what Qoheleth is talking about in the previous section, and what he's again talking about now. And he says, I've laid all this to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. And so what he's saying is that first of all, God is sovereign. That is one thing that he's saying, because all of these things, the deeds of the righteous and the wise, these are in the hand of God. God holds them. And so he is the one that is in control, not us. We can't control God by our actions. We also like to attribute intent to other people's actions. And so sometimes we look at things that are happening in our lives and we say, man, this is good, or man, this is bad. Particularly when something is bad, we like to attribute intent. And so we might look at something that's happening in our lives and we might say, man, why is this happening? This is so bad. But from our perspective, of course it's bad, but who are we to actually know what is truly good and what is truly bad? That is for God to decide. And this is what Qoheleth says, following up. He says, whether it is love or hate, man does not know, both are before him. And he says, it is the same for all, since the same event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As the good one is, so is the sinner, and he who swears is as he who shuns an oath. And then Qoheleth says, this is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that the same event happens to all. So this whole idea that the righteous and the wicked receive the same treatment and receive good and bad from God equally, regardless of whether they're righteous or wicked, this is the evil that Qoheleth is talking about at the beginning of verse 3, that the same event happens to all. He follows, and he says, also, the hearts of the children of men are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live, and after that, they go to the dead. And what he's saying here, now, evil here, in this sense, he's talking about maybe like misery. He's not talking about like moral evil in the hearts of men. Which there certainly is moral evil in the hearts of men, but here he's talking about more like the experience that we feel, that we experience in our hearts as human. And what he is saying is that all people experience misery, folly, and finally death. And this is not what we would expect, because we would expect for good things to happen to good people. We would expect that if we do things that are pleasing to God and honoring to God, he would do things for us that are good and he would bless us. But this is not the reality of life. And again, this is what Qoheleth has been telling us, and this is what we observe ourselves in our own lives. In verse 4, Qoheleth picks up and he says, "But he who is joined..." So all the hearts of children and men are full of misery, folly in their hearts while they live, and after that they go to the dead. "But he who is joined with all the living has hope, for a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten." And what Qoheleth is talking about here is he is talking about enjoying life. And that's what we're going to find out when we get into the middle section, or verses 7 to 10, when we get there at the end of the talk here. We're going to find out that Qoheleth is talking about enjoying life. And so the living at least know that they will die. So they know something, but the dead know nothing. There is no more reward for their toil under the sun, and the memory of them under the sun is forgotten. And so what he's saying is he's talking about enjoying life and not enjoying life. And once you're dead, you no longer have access to God's gift of life that he has given to all of us. And so that is what he is talking about there. And you might say, hold on a minute. Is there a contradiction here? Because I remember back in chapter 4, verses 2 and 3, that it seemed like Qoheleth was saying that it was better to be dead than to be alive, and that even maybe a stillborn child was better off than the living. And I'm going to say, no, there is no contradiction, because in the context of what Qoheleth is talking about in chapter 4, he's talking about oppression by a government or by an evil king. And so he's saying that if you are being oppressed in this life, then yeah, it's better to have not have even been born. Whereas here in this section, Qoheleth is talking about enjoyment and taking pleasure in life. And so, of course, it's better to be alive than it is to be dead, because when you're dead, you can no longer enjoy life because you're not alive. So finally, the dead, verse 6, "Their love and their hate and their envy have already perished, and forever they have no more share in all that is done under the sun." And so everything is forgotten. When you go to a graveyard or a cemetery, or you see an urn and like there's some words on there, there's some dates, there's a name, maybe says where they were born or who their parents or their children were. But that's it. That's all that you know. That's all that you know about that person. Everything that they loved, everything that they hated, things that they envied, everything about their life, all of that is gone and forgotten because they are no longer under the sun. So in this section, this first section, Qoheleth, he is, we could say that in this section, we're seeing that there is one fate for all people. And if we could even say that Qoheleth is making a complaint. And if we were to say he's making a complaint, his complaint would be that the righteous and the wise do not receive sufficient reward because all receive the same reward. And that is Qoheleth's observation. And if we want to call it a complaint, we can say that maybe he's complaining a little bit. So let's skip down now to verse 10. Verse 10 and 11. Nope, I wrote it down wrong. We're going to skip down to verse 11 and 12 because that's what it really is. And so this has a similar theme and what to the bit above that we just talked about. And what Qoheleth is saying here is he's going to tell us that we cannot predict what will happen in our lives. And so he says, "Again, I saw that under the sun, the race is not to the swift, nor battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all. For man does not know his time. Like fish that are taken in an evil net, and like birds that are caught in a snare, so the children of man are snared at an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them." Time and chance happen to all. Look, we really like to think that we can control things. We like to have knowledge because knowledge helps us to control things because we can predict, or we think we can predict, what's going to happen. And so what Qoheleth is talking about here in this section is of course he's telling us, he's giving, you know, great examples. He's giving us great examples of things turning out not the way that we would expect. Because, like he says, the race is not to the swift. Look at our lives right now and the situation that we're experiencing right now, and you can say, what in the world does a virus from China have to do with the employment rate in Ireland? Well, now we know, but 6 weeks ago or 5 months ago, that wouldn't have even been a question we would have thought about asking. And so the point is that time and chance happen to all. So man does not know his time. Man doesn't know the time of things that will happen to him. He doesn't know the time of his death. And he says chance here, and this isn't like, you know, God is rolling the cosmic dice and, you know, he doesn't know what's going to happen to us. What this means is that from our perspective, because where Qoheleth is talking about is we are here on earth under the sun. And so, and from our perspective, yeah, it looks like random things happen, that things that are completely unpredictable and completely out of control. Of course, God is sovereign, and we don't deny that. But to the way things appear to us, things appear to happen randomly. And so what Qoheleth is addressing here is he is addressing an issue of control. Or at least that's what he's observing, is that there is control, and he's observing the fact that we don't control what happens in our life. Unexpected things happen, and they can happen at any time. We also read about this in the New Testament. In James chapter 4, he says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you don't know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all boasting is evil." And so this isn't an idea that is unique to the Old Testament. This is something that is talked about in the New Testament as well. And so unexpected things will happen at any time. So now we're going to move into, you might even call this the application section, which is, it's really handy to get into something like this and to find that the application isn't so very far away from what you're looking at. So the idea here is that God commands you to find joyful contentment in life and to enjoy life, because when you die, all opportunities for this are gone. He says, "Go, eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going." So this is a command. This is a command. This passage in Ecclesiastes 9:7-10. This is, well, partly this sounds familiar. I would say that this should sound familiar because this is the fifth of five enjoy life passages in the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, the first four passages of enjoy life, which we have read previously up to now, they give good advice, or at least they seem to give good advice. But here, now we see that this advice changes. This changes, and now it's not advice anymore. Now it's a command. And we say that because this section begins with the imperative, go. Go, eat your bread with joy, and so on. So when Kohelet tells us to enjoy food, to enjoy drink, to dress well, to enjoy your spouse, or to enjoy companionship, this is not just a recommendation. This is a command from God. So what Kohelet has been teaching us in Ecclesiastes as a whole, as well as here in this passage in chapter 9, is that we should be viewing life from the viewpoint of death. Clearly, all of us will die one day, but we're not looking at death as something to fear. Rather, we're looking to the end of life to see how we should live now. So five times now, Kohelet tells us that the life we have is a gift from God. And enjoyment of these things is thankfulness to God who blessed us with them. Again, with a New Testament connection, or a connection to the New Testament, Jesus tells us this in Matthew chapter 6. He says, "Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble." And he says, "Do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, or about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing?" So again, these aren't ideas that are, you know, relegated to an obscure book of the Old Testament. These are ideas taught again in the New Testament and taught by Jesus. So what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? We're supposed to enjoy life. Kohelet's idea here in verses 7 to 10 is to enjoy the life you have been given because it is a gift to you from God. And why do we need to do this? Aside from the fact that it's a command, why do we need to enjoy the life that's been given to us by God? Well, joyful contentment honors God. To receive a gift with joy is a way of honoring the one who gave the gift. So to enjoy life is to honor God. Now, when I think that the gifts or the blessings from God are the purpose in my life, that is idolatry. So think about the blessings and the gifts from God in your own life. Sports, games, children, money, comfort, exercise, jobs, health, entertainment, knowledge, wisdom. What place do these hold in your life? Are these gifts from God that you enjoy, or have these taken the place of God? Now, to be clear, the gifts and the blessings from God are good. 1 Timothy 4:4 says that everything created by God is good. But the gifts are from God. Don't make them God. So to enjoy life and to enjoy the gift that God has given us is to honor God. Now I'm saying that this is joyful contentment. Then contentment is hard for us, isn't it? We want to achieve. We want to know. We want to control. We want to be equal to God. So think back to Genesis, to the very beginning in the Garden of Eden. God created mankind, and all that we had to do was to live in the garden, enjoy our time in the garden, enjoy our time with his creation, with each other, and enjoy our time walking with God. But we said no. That's not enough. We want to know. We want knowledge. We don't want to walk with God. We want to be God. That's what we're doing when we try to control the world around us. Now, death puts an end to all of that. Any ideas we have about controlling life and the world around us come to an abrupt stop when we are confronted with our own mortality. So when I think that the gifts or the blessings that I have in life come from myself, this also is idolatry. I'm worshiping myself. I'm denying God and the things that he has provided in the things that he has given me to enjoy. And I'm claiming that they come from my own ingenuity or my own hard work, my own efforts. And so I am worshiping myself and I'm putting myself in the place of God. But to enjoy life with joyful contentment is to worship God, not myself, not the gifts, but to worship God. So the question at the beginning, how do I live now? How do I live now as a Christian in the world, knowing my own mortality, knowing that that as we've looked at, that my effort and my wisdom and my skill and my knowledge and all these things ultimately come to nothing in the end, because in the end, I'm going to die and I'm going to be forgotten. How do I live now in this world? And the answer is to enjoy the life you have been given, because it is a gift from God.